Hello and welcome to a special podcast here. We're going to spend a bit of time talking with a man who had a major influence on some wonderful years at the Geelong Football Club, but has had a major influence on a lot of young footballers over the years. That man that I speak about is Brendan McCartney. Macca, hello and welcome.
Hello, Cam. Thanks for the spirited introduction.
Appreciate it. No worries at all. Quickly going over your, well, resume or whatever you want to call it, coaching is something that has been a part of your life for a very, very long time, and footy, in fact, has been probably a part of your entire life, Macca. Ocean Grove, Richmond, Geelong, the Western Bulldogs, Melbourne, and we're going to get to what you're up to heading into the future. But clearly, Macca, footy is something you love and are extremely passionate about.
I do. I've always loved the game, probably growing up in the bush, Cam, at a little place called Nia, which is up in the Mallee, where that was the town. It was a footy club, and there was a town, and they were synonymous with each other. And like you, they were your boyhood heroes, those guys that all had nicknames, and I don't know how good of players they were, but they won premierships, and they drank a lot of beer together, and you got to get in the showers with them as a little kid. Carry water bottles and kick footies and run around and have a ball. Please take that the right way too, get in the shower with them. That was pretty innocent back then. you know what I mean? Like, you just hang around a footy club and idolise those guys. It was great. So that's probably where the love affair with the game started. And my dad was a passionate footy man, and that rubs off on you too.
Just snuck around the crowd and just tried to get 10 cents off this person, 10 cents off that person, just so you could have enough for a pie and a can of Coke at halftime. Is that the way it worked?
That was it. You used to get 5 cents for the soft drink bottles, Cons soft drinks in Swan Hill. You got 5 cents. So you'd actually, as kids, you'd knock off people's drinks when they're half empty, just in case they hung onto the bottle and whip around the back, empty it, and everything was 5 cents, so you could buy a good whack of pies and soft drinks yourself on a good day's work.
Sounds good to me. you headed, when you did eventually move to Geelong, am I right? Now, please correct any of this, Macca. My memory is pretty bad, but you played mainly at Newtown, is that right, with your footy career?
Pretty much, but I was a St. Joey's student when we first moved to Geelong. I wasn't one of their finest exports. In fact, they didn't even have me down as a past student when a mate dragged me to a past student's function a couple of years ago. And they added me to the list. And I said, look, no offence, but I wasn't one of their greatest.
Were you politely asked to leave, were you, Macca? Was that the right word?
It wasn't. No, it was just a letter. But I left on the front bar at the Gold Diggers Hotel on the way home. I rode my bike past the pub with my mates and we had a couple of beers, and I forgot to take the letter home. And they rang Mum the next day and said, do we need to talk? Sounds like it. But I went off to Bell Park High and had a ball there, and which is now Western Heights. But the time was good. I've still got, and I'm a great mates in life. Since we're the age of 11, we've been great friends. I met him there and played a little bit of footy at St. Joey's, and then went across to Newtown and played all my footy there from then on.
Big chunk of footy. But when coaching got into your blood was certainly when the success came and on the radar of some AFL teams, was your time spent at Ocean Grove. 4 premierships, was it, Macca?
4 there, yeah. 1994 to 1997, which was a good time. It was a great little country club full of great people and players who played for the team and played for the club and loved each other. It was a fabulous experience.
And it was what we're going to talk about in a second is what you're up to at the moment with coaching and the passion around helping local coaches, any coaches, any football coaches, but any sporting coaches as well. Is that the point in time at Ocean Grove where clearly you loved your time at Ocean Grove, had great success with your time at Ocean Grove, just started thinking, oh, hang on a second, this might be something I could do more of and perhaps could do at the higher level? I mean, where did that seed get planted in your mind? Was that at Ocean Grove thinking, this could be a career for me?
No, I probably didn't have it front of mind. I was, funny enough, when I told Ocean Grove that would be my last year, and I was probably going to go off and coach St. Joey's in the Geelong Footy League, which was a full turnaround from leaving the school and leaving the footy club as a teenager. And then I'd sort of run into Jeff Geeshan during the year. Mick Turner had asked me to present in some level one courses, and I had no idea what I was going to talk about. And it was probably the first entry into, you know, that bigger world of not just worrying about your own coaching and your own club, but potentially, you know, adding your little bit to the game, the greater game, and helping other people. So Geesh just brilliantly gave up his time and sort of sat me down with some structures and setups and potential things that he'd talked about presenting in the level one courses. And the first one I went to, Matty Larkin and Ken Hinckley were two of the participants. So that was a daunting start because they just both left really distinguished AFL careers and coaching in the Hampden League. And both of them said, I made a bit of sense that day, and they picked up a couple of things. And that probably opened my mind a little bit. And then Geesh rang and said, look, throw your name in the ring for the second job at Richmond, which was a bit of a development role and the coaching reserves. And I was really fortunate to get it and forever grateful to Geesh and the Richmond Footy Club for, you know, investing and giving me an opportunity. It was fantastic.
And from there, you then took the big leap to move back to Geelong under an untried coach, a bloke who'd had success at the Essendon Football Club as a player and as a captain, but hadn't really done a heap of coaching. I mean, had been an assistant coach at North Melbourne and also the Bombers, Mark Thompson, to then get the opportunity under him as part of a new regime. Can you tell us about the early years of the Bomber years at the Cats, where there was a big turnover in the list, a lot of focus on drafting quality young men and quality young players? Give us a little insight into perhaps that period from 2000 to 2005, 2006, before the real success came.
Yeah, my pleasure. It's not a bad story in itself. Our Bomber and I first crossed paths. I was coaching against him at Punt Road. And back then, the coaches' boxes were side by side. So there were some pretty volatile characters coaching at that time at that level. And you pretty much heard what, if they were raising their voice, you could hear everything they were saying. And we played North Melbourne this day, and they had a lot of, back then, it was in your era that if you had injuries on your list, you could bring in boys out of the under 18 competition. And that particular day, he had about 10 or 11, and we were almost a full strength AFL player type reserves team. And in the end, we only won by 3 or 4 points. And we crossed paths in the car park at Punt Road, because they were the days where the seconds game was on, and then you walked over the road to the MCG, the main game. And I just introduced myself and said that I felt we were really lucky to win the game. And they'd done a brilliant job to make it so close as what they had out there with all those kids. And we got talking for 5 or 10 minutes and walked over the ground together. And he went one door and I went the other. And then the last thing he said was just stay in touch. I'll be in touch with you. So he was obviously thinking about maybe coaching himself and taking some opportunities, and it was the start of a fantastic working relationship and a great friendship, a great personal friendship. We were very much in sync with footy and teams and footy clubs, and understood each other and worked really well together. We were different people and we didn't socialise a lot together, but we just had great working rapport, which is a special time. And to answer your question around Bomber, if there's one word, he was just a teacher, a brilliant teacher. You know, he had very little teaching background. He was an electrician by trade, and he built his own business. And he had this incredible work ethic around it and behind it. He understood footy, and he worked to find out as much as he could about it and find out what made people tick. And then he could articulate it in his own unique way. He could split the game down. He was a great teacher of the small bits of the game, and could link one action or one behaviour to a much bigger chain of events, and couple that with just an incredible capacity to look at a player and work out what potentially they could become with the right development, the right coaching, what the 18-year-old could be 6 or 7 years down the track. A really unique understanding of how people fit within a team, how the skills of one player can complement the team, so the skills of another player can flourish. And underpinning that, I think he understood, I know he understood that training needed to look like a game. So if you wanted to play a certain way, training needed to reflect that. And his philosophy always was that if the game looked like training, that his players would be just fine. And then he pretty much got the balance right. He was pretty hard taskmaster on us early as coaches, pretty hard on you boys as young men. And then as people grew around him and in front of him, he sort of created more autonomy, and he just let you play and he let you coach. And over a, you know, period of 5 or 6 years, that sort of how it came to fruition. But I still have vivid memories of all you boys and us sitting in his office with the projector and him splitting the game, you know, up into pieces, and his ability to teach the contest and decisions relative to what was happening around the ball were unbelievable, really, when we think back, weren't they?
When you, oh, it certainly were. When you talk about the ability to teach and to build a list, just quickly tell our listeners, when Bomber came, and these are just rough numbers, Matty Scarlett, I think, had played about 5 games. Tom Harley, I think, about 10. Mooney came from North Melbourne, about 10 games. Milburn, roughly 35 games. And then within a 3 or 4 year period, Chapman, Joel Corey, Corey Enright, myself, Gary Ablett Jr., Steve Johnson, James Kelly, Jimmy Bartel, Andrew Mackey, Tom Lonigan, Josh Hunt, Max Rook, all came to the club. But that's just really, I mean, it all makes sense now, and it's all clear, crystal clear. You've got Brownlow medalists and All-Australians and Premiership players galore. But that's, what, roughly 20 or so players I've just reeled off there, having played 35 games or less or being brand new to the club, just a bunch of kids. Were you sitting there looking at it going, is this bloke got us on the right track? I mean, who are these kids? Or was it always fairly clear that, no, we reckon we've got a group of guys who can play and can have success going forward?
Oh, we always felt that with you boys, that the talent was there. And I think Bomber, as much as anyone, was huge on competitive people. And he just loved people who had a crack. And he could roll with mistakes. He could accept certain deficiencies and weaknesses. But if he saw a young person in front of him, or a young player or a young coach who would work and want to have a crack and develop themselves and would want to be there for the team and the club, he gave them everything. And that's a great blueprint to have for any coach. You do need, you can't survive at AFL level with no talent or limited amounts of ability. You'll get found out because it's just so competitive. But critical and more important than anything is the character that people bring and the willingness to listen and learn and get better and be coached and give. And when I think back to his frustration moments were when, you know, he had players and staff who weren't that didn't give of their best, just sort of gave up, or in you guys' case, the players' case, weren't there for the team. That set him off quicker than anything. So he didn't put big signs up that this is what I want. He didn't put up big placards, you know, this is what I stand for. But he rewarded or developed and moulded behaviours and actions when they weren't quite in keeping with what he knew. Because he'd been a three-time premiership player, a premiership captain with a young team in 1993. And he understood. He just understood what footy looked like and what finals footy in particular looked like.
Certainly did. I want to talk some of those successful years. I want to talk your experience as a senior coach and what you're up to now. But if you don't mind, we're just going to take a quick break. Back soon. All right, beautiful, Mac. Are you happy to keep going?
Going well, mate.
Cool.
Are we making sense between us?
Absolutely, mate. Perfect, perfect. Welcome back. I'm chatting with Brendan McCartney, assistant coach of the Geelong Cats, through some of the most wonderful years, and as I said earlier, has had a range of coaching experiences, and we're going to chat very, very soon about what he's up to now, which is creating something that's going to be an outstanding support for coaches right across Victoria, right across Australia in football and also in all sports. We'll get to that in a second, Macca, if that's all right. Can I just quickly... The people listening to this are going to be mainly Geelong fans, but to quickly touch on the years that the success came and the 44-year drought was broken, 2007 and that wonderful season, 2008, 2009, and And then, unfortunately, was it the end of 2009 that we lost you, Mac, or was it the end of 2010?
2010.
That's right. Those years, 7 to 10, where there were grand finals, there were premierships, there were preliminary finals, those years, what was it like? Was it, I mean, I know people joked and stirred up that, oh, well, you know, these guys are just coaching themselves out on the field. To me, it was more that you and Macca, you and Bomber and Kenny and Sando, Nigel Appin, had actually coached us and trained us up so strongly that in the end you wanted us to be able to coach ourselves out on the field in the big moments, didn't you? But what was it like through that time when things were really rolling and clicking as a group?
Very much so. That's exactly what we wanted, that you boys drove how the game looked. And to your credit, what that period around 2004 and 6, where the talent was there, you could see it, and then it would disappear, and there were gaps, and that's when the scrutiny and the pressure came. And for me, this is only a personal opinion, I think you boys arrived at a time, the player group arrived at a time where you just didn't want to let each other down anymore, and you held each other to account. And some of my fondest times through that glorious period were, I'd have a bit of a listen outside the players' room. Remember, you used to have like 2 or 3 minutes together before you came back out to listen to Bomber. And there were voices in that room that rarely spoke. Often you'd hear Scarlo demonstrative and demanding from his teammates, Dasher. Even Otto would speak up at times. It was a forum where you could eyeball each other and set the agenda for the day. And if something hadn't quite been right the week before, it would get raised, or what you'd been doing really well would be built on. And that told me personally that there was a group that were driven. And the growth through that period, the talent had been found, developed, coached, taught. Your bodies had matured, your confidence levels. And probably alongside all that, all of you just knew your position incredibly well. You just knew what to do in your role, whether it was a small forward or your role as a accountable midfielder. Joel Corey is, you know, a midfielder. You just complemented each other, but everyone knew their position. In fact, if we did move you somewhere else, some of you boys, you just adjusted. So that was just enormous predictability and comfort out on the ground. And you're right, it did get to that period, but there was that, which was a great positive, but you were still a challenging group. You know, if our training wasn't quite right, or we thought we were pretty clever and put a new drill in front of you and you boys weren't sold on it, you'd let us know pretty quickly. Or if the reviews were going more than 5 minutes, or if the opposition analysis went more than 3 minutes, you'd let us know pretty quickly. And there was pretty strong personalities in that group, but just great men and great people who loved the club and loved playing together and loved winning, which was first and foremost.
For aspiring coaches out there who are listening to this and thinking about either getting into coaching or wanting to improve themselves as coaches, tell us the balance when you talk about those strong personalities. Now, from my experience, you could look Matty Scarlett in the eye and smack him, absolutely give him both barrels. He'd probably give it back to you, chances are, but he would then take it on board and just go out and do it and deliver on it. Versus the player who you couldn't speak to like that, otherwise a brick wall would go up and they wouldn't hear any of it. They might get down on themselves and end up playing poor footy for a couple of weeks in a row. How do you balance the who to give a smack to, who to give a cuddle to, who to give the support to, who to invite round for dinner, or like that sort of aspect of coaching?
Yeah, very much so. But it's having an awareness, I think, and an appreciation of personal differences. And to be honest, it's probably making mistakes, getting it wrong, and being prepared to tackle a situation a certain way, knowing that I think I know this person pretty well, but hang on, it mightn't always work out that way. And if it doesn't work out perfectly, that you follow it up and say, look, I might have been a little bit strong with you there. I appreciate that it didn't land for us. I now know to try it a different way. But I think the art of coaching is not thinking that you know it all and that you're going to get it right the first time. You are going to make a lot of mistakes. And that, for me, that's a good thing, because it means you're, one, prepared to try things, and two, you've got some adventure about you. And that's really important as a coach. You need that. You need that sort of pioneer instinct that you're prepared to have a crack at things and potentially do things a little bit differently and push the boundaries and but also know that if you do not quite get it right, that you just retrace your steps and there's learning. And
how hard is that? Sorry to interrupt, mate. How hard is that compared to being the main man, the head coach? You know, your time at Ocean Grove, you're the head coach, the main man. Then a period of time, Geelong, Essendon, assistant coach. Then at the Bulldogs, when you are the main man, getting that balance right and having a go and being prepared to make mistakes when you're in the head seat, where everything's magnified times 100.
Yeah, it's just having the willingness to balance your creativity with listening and still hold on to some things that you know stand the test of time. That there's certain things in a game of footy that doesn't matter what level you're at or what age you're at, they're still critical. And understanding that people have different capacities and capabilities in those things that are time-honored and that you really believe in. But probably in hindsight, I use the word reflection, you know, finding time to reflect and go back over and revisit things in your own mind when you get a little bit of time on the way home, or if you're walking the dog, or any downtime. You don't get a lot of downtime. The role of the senior coach is incredibly consuming, and it can consume you. And I know it got hold of me for a while, probably about a 3-month period where, you know, I was impetuous and probably wanted to push things along a little quicker than they were ready for, perhaps, and stepped on a few toes. And having the time to reflect is critical. It's a really important word, because finding time to think and go back over things is almost on the spot learning and teaching. You're almost developing yourself because you're reflecting on what's been and how you get that worked. Oh no, I need to do that a different way, or go and seek some advice on that. So,
is it realistic as the senior coach that you can get around and feel like you have a really strong, good or bad, but a really strong relationship with every single player on the list? Can you have conversations with every single player on the list every single week about every aspect of the game? Or is that just impossible with the time demands on a senior coach?
You have to do it. The job now necessitates that you do it. If you don't do it, there'll be problems. And in the end, I guess if I roll it back a little bit, winning and losing creates far different situations. If you're winning some games, it does probably cover up some things, but eventually it will be an issue. If you're losing it, it exacerbates it and blows things right up in front of you. So the job pretty much demands, to answer your question, that you do it. And the key then is to understand all your different players and understand where they're at with their line coach or their development coach or their academy coach. And that's a difficult thing, given the time constraints. And the best clubs, the great clubs, they allow their senior coach to coach. They understand, you know, he needs to fulfil his media commitments. There's some marketing elements. There's the other things at play daily and weekly, but give him time to coach. And the difficulty can be sometimes when you aren't having the – and most people start coaching not at the top with a team that's flying. You've got to do so many other things to pick the show up and get it rolling. But it's the ability to create the right environment in line with your vision and then build the relationships to support it is critical.
Your brain, Macca, footy brain, it's a wealth of knowledge across 5 AFL clubs in a variety of roles, from development, assistant coach, head coach. I mean, not to mention the times that you've spent at local football clubs. There is so much there. I'm excited to talk about what you're shifting into now with a clear passion to do so. You're trying to put together, or you are putting together, a program, I believe, that is going to help and be a really valuable resource for all level of coaches, juniors, local football, AFL, whatever it might be, right across Australia. Can you tell us a little bit about that? What are you trying to put in place?
Well, there's two of us. There's myself and Susie Robinson, who, to be honest, a lot of it's her brainchild. A terrific friend, and we work well together. And it sort of started from me, her asking me to pitch in and provide some guidance to the junior coaches at Bowen Heads, which is our local town. And out of that, the idea germinated to the point where her boy, Ted, playing junior footy, and we got talking around, are we as an industry giving our junior coaches the resources needed? And the facts are that a lot of people are reluctant to put their hand up and coach junior teams, women and men and boys and girls teams. And often it's because they don't feel comfortable in their own competency to know the game well enough to teach how to kick, how to tackle. They may not have played the game themselves. They haven't been fortunate like we have to be around great foot. And most of our learning isn't found, you know, halfway up a tree or on a pole. We actually interact with other people and we learn off them, and either visually or we hear them and we read stuff. So our passion is to be a resource for coaches at all levels around what the game actually is, what are the fundamentals that underpin it, the foundations. And you and I are both on the same page there. For us, football is about the contest and all the decisions that you make around the ball, and the decisions you make half a kick away or a handball away and then a kick away and then maybe a kick and a half away, and linked in with, you know, how to play. What do you do when you play on the wing? What do you do when you play at halfback? What do you do when you're a tall defender? And all the craft and fundamentals that allow you to play your position, because in the end, young people, all of us, we sort of want to run into a game knowing that we're doing our bit for the team, that we're contributing to the game. We sort of want to feel that we understand enough, we physically can do the things that the game requires, and that we feel pretty confident knowing that, you know, we've got some competency and understanding of the game. And it might, you know, where we're starting from now might be quite small, but it's about reaching junior coaches, junior clubs, after school programs or you know, school programs, holiday programs, coach mentoring programs, where, as you said, the experience and knowledge that we have between us over a vast working life can hopefully help people feel comfortable with what they're doing as coach.
A lot of these people who do end up in coaching positions are often just, have you got enough time to do the job while you're around your work? Oh, cool, there's the clipboard, you're the coach. We've got no one else. And
that's it.
They don't know where to start. And so what you're providing is no doubt a philosophy around, you know, what to focus on and all that, but obviously the nitty-gritty as well, some drill ideas, some ways to get other parents to buy into different roles so you can provide a really strong support network around the kids or the adults or whatever team that they are coaching. And I would assume, Macca, that this is going to be crucial for women's football as a big focus, as it's just exploded in participation numbers. And maybe some mums or dads have just been thrown the clipboard and say, go and coach them, to make sure that these girls, as they're moving through and this opportunity to now realise their dream and play AFLW or at whatever level they want to play, that they get the right coaching at a young age.
Absolutely. You couldn't have said it any better. I couldn't have said it any better myself. So what we're offering at playercoach.com.au is effectively AFL drills or AFL play that can be opened up and taught and molded to 8, 9, 10-year-old youngsters, girls and boys who are just experiencing our great game for the first time, and helping coaches in a hands-on way of how to teach it, you know, how to teach 4v2 contest area where they know, do I go in and win the ball? Do I stay out? Do I move to the next area? And learning is actually teaching, and equip these coaches starting out, or coaches that want to grow themselves as coaches, with really hands-on. And that's the uniqueness of the program, is that it's AFL footy brought to life out on the training ground with really hands-on instruction. You know, there's a way to roll the ball in. There's a way to feed the ball to advantage so that a young girl can feel comfortable to use her body and own the space and get her hands on the ball. And that may then help her confidence when she goes into a game 3 days later. So That's available. The coach mentoring and growing program under the same banner is around, between us, culturally offering experience, helping clubs, you know, set their vision and create the environment that they want around bringing people through their club and resourcing their biggest resource, which is your senior coach. So if it's Grovedale or it's Geelong West or Ocean Grove or Bannockburn, the very best help's available to those people in a variety of ways, whether it's drills, whether it's styles of education, how to set your week up. There's probably not going to be too much there that either of us haven't come across in our working lives or seen. So, and couple that with some after-school work that we are going to get up and running at Western Heights Secondary College in Term 4, and which is available to all. It's not about just young people who think they might get drafted or want to get drafted. It's all ages, all abilities, break the game down, you know, some very much around them owning their own development, their own progress with us helping them and resourcing them. But young people having a vision and a drive to get better and learn our great game with the right resourcing and own their own development and feel more comfortable and learn more about the game and themselves. So, and that hopefully will lead into some coaching courses in the area where we can actually resource coaches with what the game is and what the coaches want. They want experiences. They want to hear about how players develop and grow. They crave drills, how to teach the drills, a program where they can learn off one another and access the best football minds available that are current, have AFL knowledge and a lot of AFL experience. Because in the end, the game at under 10 level is no different to the game at AFL level. There's just a lot more people watching. There's one ball. The decisions are the same. It's just that AFL players make the decisions instinctively because they've grown up with the game and they receive the best coaching. So our passion is to give back to all communities, all levels, grow the game. The game's been very good to both of us. It's been a big part of our lives and we're looking forward to it.
Well, I can certainly vouch for the way that you've taught the game, Macca, over the many, many years, and Susie Robinson obviously involved as well, playercoach.com.au. To think that Scarlett, Kelly, Joel Corey, Corey Enright, Steve Johnson, Matty Egan, Max Rook, Josh Hunt, all in coaching roles at AFL clubs with a lot of the stuff that they've learnt through you and obviously through Bomber and Kenny Hinkley and Sando and Nigel Appin as well. But clearly, you know a lot about the game, Macca, so I encourage any listeners out there who either coaching their sons or daughters' teams or they are coaching teams and they want to progress their coaching knowledge to check that out. It'd be well worth a look. Before I let you go, Macca, I'd love to just get a quick word on this week's grand final. Unfortunately, the Cats aren't going to be there, going down to the Tigers on Friday night, and that incredible game where the Giants got up over Collingwood in what was just a tense thriller at the end there, the Giants holding on. Is it just a case that the Giants are going to be too banged up perhaps and too much out of the legs and the Tigers go away and win this? Or do you see maybe a little upset and the GWS Giants can pinch one again and continue their incredible run to the grand final?
Possibly. I don't mind where you're heading with that. There's one great team. They are mature. Richmond, I'm talking about, they're mature, and those things I was talking about before, they all know their position, they're drilled in how they play, and they bring it every week, don't they? And at some stage, and they've shown over the last 3 months that it might be halfway through the second quarter or late in the third or early in the third like it was the other night, they just get a little 15 or 20 minute patch where they're almost impossible to stop. The Cats were fantastic the way they sort of kept the ball off them a little bit and kept it wide and then attacked the goal face, but once they got weary and they started to turn the ball over in the corridor across halfback, they're in all sorts. Because if you give the ball back to Richmond there, you've got some real problems. But for all that, GWS made it a stoppage-based game. They made it a contest-based game. They've got enormous amounts of talent in their team. And they're Leon's team. He's moulded them well. They've made lots of list decisions over the last, probably more than anyone, the amount of players they've bought in and traded out, bought in, traded out, drafted, developed out of Australia-wide and out of their academy programs in New South Wales. They're ready to go. Your question is a good one, or your statement around how banged up they are. You never know. You do wellness, you do monitoring, and you do testing, but there's also the mental side that, you know, the belief that they grew out of that last 5 minutes. It was extraordinary what they did. They were going to lose five times, but they just kept coming up with the ball, didn't they? And they got pinned in their back 25 metres or 30 metres and just refused to give up late in the game. And that can be just great development. But and learning, but and they potentially going to bring in three really high quality players that are fresh, that didn't play last week. Coniglio, Whitfield and Green, they are going to have fresh legs, and they are seriously good players. I think it's going to be a great game. Maybe the Tigers just. I think Lynch adds something that is really difficult to stop, but at the other end of the ground, those three talls, GWS, have got, they can just get to contests and they can get across the ground. They're extraordinary, all three of them. They're nearly 200 centimetres and they run like midfielders. So it's going to be a mighty game, and there'll be some predictable things, there'll be some unpredictable things, and we'll be sitting there at 6 o'clock on Saturday night going, geez, I didn't see that coming. So it's just a great week and great to be around it and watching it.
Well, appreciate your time, Macca. Let's hope we do get a really good grand final between the Giants and the Tigers. I could sit here and chat to you for hours upon hours, and to our listeners, we could do this into about a 15-part series where I could really go into footy with Macca, because I always love talking footy and talking coaching and picking your brain about teams and development of young players. But really appreciate you chatting with us. Playercoach.com.au is your exciting next adventure. Something tells me, though, Macca, that even with his passion around what you're going to do, I still feel like there's plenty more coaching left in you. There's too much in that brain, Macca. It's going to get out there at some stage and have an influence on another generation of players. But good luck with what you're doing now, and really appreciate you having a chat to us.
Cameron, you're a star. Thanks for thinking of us.
That's Brendan McCartney. Thank you to all of our listeners out there. This is just a special one-off podcast with a man who did plenty for the Geelong Footy Club and has done plenty for a lot of young players out there. So check out playercoach.com.au. Hopefully over the summer they do let me maybe do a couple more specials with some more one-on-one chats, and we're not as rushed as much. But we will be back next year with the Geelong Cats podcast to the final bell. We do appreciate everyone who's tuned in. Thank you, and enjoy the off-season, and we'll see you next year.